Okay, so first of all, thanks a lot for organizers, for organizing such a great event here. And thanks a lot for letting me participate and give a talk. And I guess it will be much more theoretical. It will be a PowerPoint presentation. And there are many specialists here. Many people work on this, and I think this topic somehow more belongs to the last week discussion about the magnetic order in foreign compounds or close to superconductivity, but before superconductivity, these compounds comes into the play. So I'm going to discuss magnetic order in iron ferrite and halcogenides, and my perspective will be from more localized point of view, and just to see how magnetic order can be explained. And I immediately apologize if I forget some reference to somebody sitting here. Please excuse me, but I know that that's just obvious. Okay, so the topic I'm going to discuss, and this is the motivation, is the iron telluride. And you probably know that both magnetic and electronic properties of this compound very much depend how much interstitious iron you have, and there is a certain evolution of magnetic order when you put more and more interstitious iron in this compound. So if this is like schematic presentation of iron telluride, then this additional interstitious iron goes in between. And basically the idea is when Y is small, Y is the concentration of interstitious iron, so iron excess. So when Y is small, then we have commensurate antiferromagnet, and this is this double strike state. We'll discuss which kind of double strike it can be. And then when we have more and more interstitious iron, then there is a transition from commensurate to incommensurate spiral with the Q vector QQ. And basically the idea is how we can capture both magnetic ground state and also the evolution of this magnetic order. So this is the motivation.
Natasha, excuse me. Is it possible to make this stoichiometric compound?
No. So basically the law, okay, I'm not experimentalist. Maybe Steve knows how to do it. But
as sure, you just break down the model and put it on the computer.
Okay, then, I know that the lowest one is like 0.04. This is the lowest one, 0.06, depending on the group. But this is...
And they're not homogeneous. What are the red points measuring? How do they measure the red points?
This one?
Yeah.
In this phase diagram. So this is the phase, I will discuss this phase diagram later again, but so basically this is X-ray, so this is the structure measurements.
Okay.
So, and this is the measurement from the group in Dresden, so from CPFS. Yes.
I'm sure you're going to tell us this, but just for the crystallographically impaired, is this pi over 2, pi over 2 with one iron unit cell,
and okay. I have a particular slide for this just to avoid the confusion about this. Okay? So I just want to say that the basic idea of my talk is just to see what happens if we put more and more iron inside this compound, and what is the kind of minimal complicated model which can explain this evolution. Okay, so basically this is the plan for my talk. I'm almost sure that I will not be able to finish, but I'm here. I will not finish, then ask me a question later. I will first start to talk about low iron excess, so minimal one, where we have this commensurate antiferromagnetic order, and all details can be found in this work. So Andrei is also here, and Saval Dukunin is my student. And the second work is about the effects of iron excess. And basically, I would just say that iron excess is nothing else as a charge doping, electron doping, and how we can look to the changes in magnetism due to this is to see what happens with electrolyte interaction, and that's what we compute. Okay, and this is, it's already accepted, so it will be published in this year in PhysRB. And this is with Rafael Pinatz. Okay. So iron telluride is one of the families of these excited iron-based superconductors, and it's the simplest one, and it's probably the most correlated one. And I think for this everybody agrees. And that was shown already like 4 years ago, that the resistivity indicates that it's probably not a good metal, at least it's a bad metal. And what is also interesting, so it's, this is the structure, I guess everybody knows. And what is also interesting, that first of all, there's no good nesting in this compound, in the parent compound, when Y is small. And there are different Q vectors, one corresponding to, let's say, bad nesting, and this is, once again, the same bad nesting as a good nesting in iron Q vectors. It's 5005, one iron unit cell rotations, and magnetic order happens at completely different Q vectors, so it's by half Q vectors.
Could you remind us of the size of the moment?
What?
The size of the moment?
Yes. The size of the moment is, once again, next slide.
Right. So that stresses your point that that's a very unusual iron nictite, because that's big.
Yeah. It's a different, and I really think that maybe one do not need to combine. It's the same kind of compounds, but probably one can look slightly different on the magnetic properties of these two compounds. Okay, so this is somehow, and I will go on in the whole introduction to motivate one why one can look to the magnetism of this compound at least partly from the localized approach, localized spin approach. And then, in order to set notation, because I will show some experimental data, there are two ways to show the data in the K space, one iron unit cell and two iron unit cell, and the Q vectors which will appear to this are this one iron and two iron unit cell. So I'm using one iron unit cell, and this point is by half, so for experimentalists, it's usually noted as pi 0 point. And when I'm talking about pi 0 Q vector, especially for neutron scattering, it's always pi point. So I'm working always in one iron.
Wait, you're working in the blue brilliant zone, right? No, this one.
I'm working in the big brilliant zone, in the green brilliant zone, and this is this.
Green zone.
It's just for notation, and that's once again more evidence for local moment. So as you said, that local ordered local moment is rather large, is 2.5 magneton Bohr. Actually, the fluctuating magnetic moment can be even larger, and that was seen by a group of Tranquada, by Igor Zalesniak, that it can be up to 3 magneton Bohr. So here's susceptibility, and basically, so these are compound when this interstitious component is very small, but here is tellurium substituted for selenium, and when you see that when there is mostly tellurium, we have nice Q-device behavior, which almost disappear when we go to optimal doping with selenium. And once again, this is the magnetic moment per iron, and you can see that it's significantly stronger for iron telluride, for undoped iron telluride. Okay, so all of this somehow point that maybe localized picture is not a bad picture to try to explain the magnetism in this compound. Okay, so this is neutron scattering data, and once again here the data like pi half corresponds to pi zero, but basically from this data what is seen that the magnetic order is indeed determined by the Q vector pi half. But it's not only one vector, it's 4 of them, and they are not equivalent. And actually, it's a question, what is the actual order? Is it just one of these non-equivalent Q vectors, pi half, minus pi half, and pi half, and pi half? Or it's a combination of the two, because they see this C4 symmetric picture, but maybe it's coming from twinning. And I will discuss this in a little bit more details. Okay, so this is the question about the double strand, and basically we can try to understand what stabilizes the magnetic order, both from classical and quantum approach. And the minimal model for the classical ground state, one can look to Heisenberg super exchange interaction J1, J2, J3, and Ehrlichi was one of the first people who proposed to look to this model. And basically, in this model, there is a certain regime where this state can be realized, but not classical. Okay? So we have this interaction up to the third order, and it was a DFT calculation by FY and O, published in 2009. And actually, they showed that in this compound with in iron telluride, the coupling between third members can be rather strong. And in the limit when J3 is larger than half J2 and significantly larger than superchain between nearest neighbor, one can look for this double strike. However, in this limit, if you look to this model classically, the ground state is actually the spiral. It's not one of these bicollinear states, it's this spiral. And the reason for this is that there is this J1 term which gains energy for the classical spiral. What they show actually, so this paper was one of the papers that suggests this bicollinear order to be, so that this model explains this bicollinear order, but once again in classical model, you will not get this, you will get only the spiral.
Natasha, I'm sorry, can you give us some intuition how J3 can be bigger than J1?
J3 is the coupling through the tellurium. So if you think that tellurium is rather big, so it's here, so you will have one tellurium on top, so it just go.
Aren't those spins irons in the picture?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, they have to go through two.
You have to go through two tellurium.
And they're on opposite sides.
Where are the tellurium? Well, tellurium is in the center.
In the center, right?
Yes, but they are also on the up. So they are in the center, but they are on the next plane, on the plane above, and on the plane below.
Probably
the angle. Yeah. I mean, I think if you try to do this super exchange, this complicated super exchange, and take everything into account, then probably you can get it. Once again, they did the DFT calculation, they did mapping to this super exchange model, and they managed to get this large value of J3. But in any case, as long as J1 is non-zero, actually you will get, classically you will get just a spiral. Well, I want to say that from the same DFT calculation, the difference, the energy difference between the double strand, actually any of the double strand, and the spiral order is very small, so it's around like 0.06 millielectron volts, so it's basically degenerate, which also suggests that J1 is quite small. Well, I want to say that actually many people heard about the bicollinear order. This is actually this one. So you have ferromagnetic like double strike pointing in one of the directions. This order breaks C4 symmetry, but there are actually infinite number of by half states that can be a different combination of this, and they're all classically degenerate. Okay? So all of them has this energy. It's only J3 terms which enters into this energy. And the two most discussed is Plaquette state. So basically the Plaquette state is orthogonal double spiral. So you have one spiral going like this and another ferromagnetic spiral going like this. They're like 90 degrees with respect to each other. Or you can think about this as this Plaquette, or it's this bicollinear state. But in principle, it can be also the non-collinear spiral with this 90 degrees, which also classically has the same energy. So basically, the question which we were trying to answer was how to stabilize this order with respect to spiral, and actually which order we stabilize, how to remove this degeneracy between all these states. And classically, basically what can help is biquadratic exchange. And this biquadratic exchange can have different origin. The most natural one is due to magnetoelastic coupling, because there is always distortion in this compound the monoclinic distortion in this iron chloride. And Mazin in his recent paper showed that actually you can get all these non-Heisenberg exchange from a pure electronic basis, and they are also not so small. Okay. Another one, you can look to the spin model, and you consider it quantum mechanically, and then you look what is the role of quantum fluctuation due to interacting spin waves in this model, and if order by disorder can also select one of these states.
That's just a comment. Any sort of electronic process that gives you the exchange interactions, the S dot S interactions, eventually would also give you multiple spin interactions.
Yes, but usually they are very small.
Well, that depends on.
But I mean, what Martin showed that usually they are very small. In both actually peptides and halogenides, they are not so small.
Yeah.
That was his last paper.
So there is also another paper by Frederic Millat and Fuchun Zhang, in which back in 2000, when they look at double existence spin one chain, what they showed is if you have quasi degenerate orbitals, in that case was T2G orbitals of Hamiltonian and Lie, you could show that actually, if you just consider the fourth order term in the Schiffer loop, so decoupling is what Chinon is alluding to, and actually the value of that K term that you have turns out to be quite substantial of the same order of G1, a fraction of
R. Yes. I agree. But what I want to say here, there are many of them, it's nearest neighbor, second neighbor, let's just look at them all. So basically this is the magnetoelastic coupling, how we want to look. So basically there are different modes. There are Q equals zero elastic modes, but there are finite Q modes. So basically UXY is Q equals zero mode, it's nothing else, it's a shear distortion. And these two modes are finite Q modes. In iron telluride, this is the dominant one. It's the biggest one, at least it looks like. So, and then these modes give an isotropic second neighbor interaction, and it also produces the biquadratic term along diagonals. So, these are the modes, this U5, it's just some bonds, red bonds getting longer, yellow bonds getting shorter, and these kind of bonds, so it's just squishing. But once again, these both are finite Q modes. They produce an isotropic nearest neighbor interaction and also biquadratic along the sides in ring exchange. So one can compute all of them just from magnetoelastic coupling. Standard story, you have magnetic, you have part of the Hamiltonian describing spin degrees of freedom, then there is magnetoelastic coupling, elastic modes, you integrate out phonons. That's all of them. That's what you get is complicated nearest neighbor and second neighbor interaction. In principle, you can also compute the third neighbor, they will be smaller. So integrating these funnels, that's what you get. Once again, if you look to numbers, the dominant term is this biquadratic coupling along due to this shear distortion. First person who looked for this was intranural pole. And basically, that can stabilize the bicollinear structure. So, as I said, classically, that is the mode which is dominating, and you can see here, so the green spin is pointing up, red spin is pointing down. This is how this bicollinear structure can be stabilized from the whole manifold of the double stripes. Okay, so we look for this question also quantum mechanically. So, how we did this. So basically the idea is the following. So if J1 is very small, then let's first look to J2 and J3 model, because we also see that classically the energy of the states is only proportional to G3. And if you forget about G1, then your J2, G3 model is nothing else as J1, J2 model on the square lattice, but just rotated. And this is the order by disorder story, which was considered by Pierce at some point, Larkin and Ramachandra. And basically, the question is, can order by disorder remove this distortion, remove this degeneracy between double stripes? So if we are in the limit J3 larger than J2 over 2, once again, think about J1, J2 model, then basically the quantum fluctuation select stripe configuration for each sublattice. So if you look to this picture, so now you have a blue sublattice of spin and red sublattice of spin, and they are completely decoupled. So now you have a stripy order in each of these sublattices. And if you look for quantum fluctuation, they choose either pi 0 or 0 pi for this new lattice. That would be our pi half in the one iron unit cell. So order by disorder can do it. How we can look for it? So we first consider, as I said, J1 equal to 0. We did spin wave excitation. So if you stay at the non-interacting spin wave limit, what you have in this spectrum, you do calculation. So this is one sublattice which we call alpha, this is another sublattice which we call beta. So you have nodes everywhere at all q vectors pi half and plus minus pi half. But some of these are accidental, and skipping all the details, so you look for interacting spin waves, you do Hartree-Fock, you combine all possible terms, and the gaps open at accidental zero. So it's the standard order by disorder story. And that's how it looked like. So, and what we did is at the 1 over S order. So next step is to introduce G1, and now G1 will make this selection. Yes?
But at this stage, there are still two states degenerate.
They're completely degenerate. There are two sublattices actually which are not talking to each other.
No, I'm talking about with 1 over S corrections.
1 over S corrections, the state, what do you mean? Now we choose
the angle is either 0 or pi.
Which angle?
Theta.
The angle between this.
Or gamma.
Within each sublattice.
Within each sublattice, when you do 1 over S, you select pi 0 or 0 pi.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But these two sublattices of even side and odd side, they
sure.
still do not talk to
sure.
each other.
Absolutely.
And then, in order that they start talking, we switch
mm-hmm.
J1. And now we can get the difference between bicollinear, this diagonal stripe, which is just one Q vector state, and this plaquette state, which is two Q state. Okay? So once again, J1 provides the coupling, and we consider G1 small, so we introduce this coupling perturbatively, and basically assume that it leads to renormalization of the spectra only near the true Goldstone pole. The difference is that for a diagonal double step, this bicollinear state, these Goldstone nodes for even and odd sublattices are the same. And for orthogonal double step, for the plaquette, these Goldstone nodes happening at two different Q vectors. Okay? So these are two main differences. And basically, skipping details, basically what you have interacting Goldstone bosons. You can see that for a bicollinear state, exactly because these two Goldstone poles are exactly the same for even and odd sublattices, what you get is that you get the instability at this Q vector, how this instability grows. So if you introduce K tilde, the deviation from the Goldstone node, then this instability grows as a square root of k. So basically, that tells us that the bicollinear state is unstable with respect to quantum fluctuation, if you consider G1, G2, G3 model, okay? So the difference for the plaquette is just you have one solution which is kept because this Goldstone mode happens at two different k points. So for example, pi half, and pi half minus pi half, these are two non-equivalent points. So you have one gap solution and another solution become unstable, but it becomes unstable not immediately. So as long as you have J1 small, and the smallness should be like this, so J1 multiplied by S, we are doing 1 over S correction, so it's S, the value of the spin S matters, divided by J3, as long as this value is small, the spectrum for the plaquette state will be stable. Okay. So basically what we get, so from quantum mechanics, if you consider the no undistorted lattice, the isotropic lattice, what we get is that the quantum fluctuation selects Plunkett order. What happens in the real compound is probably the magnetoelastic coupling is stronger than quantum mechanics, but maybe that is the reason. Actually, nobody still knows if it's a bicollinear or the Plunkett structure. There are different indications, but neutron scattering still does not resolve this problem. So once again, quantum mechanics and classical mechanics give two different answers.
But experimental, once again, I'm not sure. Is it not experimental that it's the Plunkett or is it the alpha?
I mean, if you look to the neutrons, you see these four peaks.
Yeah.
So these four peaks can, in principle, would indicate the Plunkett structure if it would be no twinning. But because the crystal are twinned, you can say, okay, there is one part, one domain with one Q vector, another domain with another Q vector, and for some strange reason, they give you the same intensity.
Doesn't this require there to be an orthorhombic distortion if you have this, the upper state?
Mm-hmm. Not monoclinic.
Monoclinic distortion, but can you look for the, which this one doesn't?
This one doesn't, but this
so
can still survive. You know,
structure
is this one. Okay? And that's why I'm saying the magnetoelastic coupling, once you introduce significantly strong shear distortion, this is winning. Okay? If you look just pure for quantum mechanics, then it's a Plunkett state which is winning. But I would just say if distortion would be smaller, if one can somehow make it smaller, I don't know. But for neutron scattering, you see four Q peaks at four Q vectors. And basically, once again, this is one Q vector, and it breaks C4 symmetry.
Yeah.
And this is the state which is the two Q spiral, and this does not break this.
So can they be twinned?
We already talked. I talked to John Trugoda here again, if they can be twinned, and they say maybe it's not done. Okay.
Sorry, just to... I wasn't quite sure I understood the conclusion. Experimentally, they see the distortion corresponding to the bicollinear structure.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
But in neutron scattering, they see four peaks.
I understand. In neutron, they can't tell.
Okay.
But in X-rays, they can tell.
In X-ray, yes, there is a distortion.
You can tell that you have that crystal structure
crystal
doesn't necessarily.
Yeah.
But if you could then detwin it and just
of course,
you would then be able to tell how big it is.
And what is the situation regarding the structural transition versus the magnetic transition? Are they, or is the material like non?
So in this particular material, so if Y is small, this excess of iron, you have only one structure, you have one transition. Structural transition and magnetic transition happens at the same temperature.
Okay.
And that's different for pnictites, where you have this temperature interval between the structural transition and the magnetic transition. And actually, what I would say that this one, because it breaks the discrete symmetry, so if that would be this state, that would also point that in principle the structural transition and magnetic transition should happen for two different temperatures, and you would see the pneumatic phase here as well. But that was not so.
Not necessarily. Is the structural transition first order or second order?
It's probably first order.
Yes.
Weak
first
order.
Then it can be
simultaneous.
Maybe.
Even in nictites there.
No, I'm just saying here it's a first order.
Even in nictites there can be coexisting first order phase transitions.
Yeah,
or
sure.
Both.
I'm just saying that this one breaks discrete symmetry, breaks C4 symmetry, and this state does not.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably not. Okay, so the second, just one more thing which I wanted to show. So this model was actually studied by Zinzanger, Nick Shannon, and Momoy 2009 by exact diagonalization, and they look for quantum model. And basically what they consider nearest neighbor both ferromagnetic and antiferromagnetic. And in both cases, they found this pi-half order at large values of J3. So, and you can see that for antiferromagnetic, it's for larger J3, and for ferromagnetic, it's for lower J3, but more or less they're for significant value of J3, the quantum model with spin 1/2 also give you this order, basically for any values of the second neighbor coupling. This is exact diagonalization. Okay, so the second part of my talk, let's say I'll try to make it quick. So it's basically the effect of iron excess. And obviously that effective ionic excess cannot be considered by localized moment, because these are new charges that are coming to the system and we cannot account them in the spin-only model. So, and once again, this is this phase diagram. Once again, so basically, as you can see that here, there is only one transition. This is the structural phase diagram. And here, immediately as monoclinic distortion sets in, you have this antiferromagnetic order. Here's this very interesting triclinic point. And basically what happens here, this is the QQ spiral. And this QQ is the deviation from the pi half. So it's like pi half minus delta, pi half minus delta. And this delta is first temperature dependent, but then it falls to a certain value that it's the Q that is like 0.4.
Why is that a tricritical point?
Because you have this, you have this monoclinic phase, you have the tetragonal phase, and this is the orthorhombic phase.
What are the orders of the transition? I mean, a tricritical point is where a first order transition becomes secondary.
Here it becomes secondary. So this is the first order transition. I don't know if you can think about this like this only for the upper line, or you just look to this. So this is first order transition.
Yeah.
And here is the second order, because it's now, if you think about the magnetism, now it's incommensurate.
Yeah, so if it's just a second order line running into a first order line, it's not a special type of critical point. It's just a critical end point.
OK, they're all two critical points. I mean, so this is the first order phase transition.
Steve, isn't there a historical, so in water, don't we call tricritical point when you have?
That's a triple point.
Yeah. Or triple point.
Maybe. Some sense, I think it's, in a weak sense, it can be considered as this white line split into two transitions.
Okay. Yeah, that's also not a.
So what I'm saying that point. Here you go. So this structure, this actually was structural analysis. So this is tetragonal, this is orthorhombic, this is monoclinic.
So I guess. Triple point would be.
They call it three, okay, whatever. It's not a point, okay? Well, I want to say that the Q vector actually changes with temperature. That's, okay, so this is pi half minus delta, pi half minus delta, so delta locks at this value. Okay, so that's the point, that the local spin model cannot capture the evolution from of magnetic order from iron excess. And itinerant model, actually, there was some attempt to describe the magnetic order in iron telluride for small y or for big y from a itinerant model, but the itinerant model does not capture the correct magnetic order. So, and then basically, it's the conversation of last week from Luplow, from Lenny, that Hund's coupling is important, and there are probably different orbitals have different levels of localization, and our idea was the following. So let's follow this idea, and let's assume that some orbitals are localized and some orbitals are itinerant. So we can look, we took a tie binding calculation from Fa Wang et al. And basically we look to those which are the most localized, which I say, okay, they are localized. We put them into localized spin state. Due to Hund's coupling, they form spin one. And what we do with the rest, we derive effective free orbital model. And then all the iron excess goes into effective free orbital model. Okay. That's what we did. So we took this five orbital tie binding model from this paper. And basically, we project out these the most localized orbitals. Once again, the notation is, it's the question of rotated or not rotated unit cells.
These
collect,
so the X2 minus Y2, so the
orbitals. This is XY, it depends on notation. So this one is XY, Okay, for some works it's called XY orbit, let's say it's the question of notation. And usually at some tight binding models, this one was for nucleotides, this one was considered to be like quite itinerant, phi z square minus r square. But for this tight binding model, for them, this is also the most local. We just took this tight binding model from this paper and So basically, from this tight binding model, we just plot. What we assume this virtual crystal approximation. We assume that when we put more iron there, the band structure does not change. The justification for this, it's interstitial one. It's not going to the sides. It's not substituting tellurium. So basically, the level how we control it, it's just basically by changing the chemical potential. What you can see here, that for mu equal to zero, mu equal to zero does not correspond to no interstitial sign. It's just this minimal level which you can get. But you don't have good nesting. There is some nesting, and if there is some nesting, it's pi zero, zero pi nesting, and not pi half. So you cannot, from this itinerant picture, you cannot get any enhanced magnetic fluctuation with this vector. What happens if you just move the chemical potential, you see that the whole pockets disappear completely. Basically, what you have is no nesting and only electric pockets, and then they're growing. This is maybe two big values of mu, but this is just how the Fermi surface look like for this time-binding model. And basically, was debate at some point between Savrasov, Sink, and some other people, how many electrons are donated from interstitial iron. Okay, so we just try two point of view, because the second paper was actually kind of comment on the first one. So it's either 6 or 8. We took both 6 electrons and 8 electrons, and of course it's changed. So this is the value of Y, how much interstitial iron you have, and how much you shift your chemical potential for this tight binding. So you can see that qualitatively it's the same. Okay, so we consider that it's donate 8, but if you consider 6, numbers would be slightly different, but not so much. Okay?
Natasha, just a quick question. Do you know where iron atoms go, the excess iron?
In between. So they do not go neither to iron sites or not to lorine sites. There are enough. It's kind of not very dense lattice, so there are spaces in between, so they go interstitial.
And iron is really small.
Yes, so there are spaces.
Some of it in plane, right?
No.
Some are plane of iron, gradual iron planes, correct?
They're mostly going in the planes, but not only. So, but mostly in the planes. So in any case, what I want to say, so taking this tight binding and just doing this, what we look is how the total number, which let me say, so we just compute what is the occupation of each of these orbitals and how they change with this excess of iron. Once again, the only thing we are actually doing is changing the chemical potential, and you once again see that the occupation of this pz square minus r square and x square minus y square, you don't see them. So this and this, they're changing the least. Okay, so the model is the hybrid model. So we have our spins, we have coupling to spins, it's due to Hund's coupling. Oh, so we have spins, we have itinerant model for itinerant electrons, and we have coupling due to the Hund's coupling. For the spin-spin model, once again, we assume that the spin is equal to 1, and basically we assume that there is this up to the third neighbor super exchange coupling, Heisenberg-like, and we assume, as we derive these terms from the magnetoelastic coupling, that there are some various kind of biquadratic spin exchange, and that spins are coming from these two orbitals, which we project out. Okay? So for itinerant electrons, we have hopping and O interactions, the Coulomb interaction and Hund coupling, both intraorbital and intraorbital. And basically, we have this coupling, as I said, which is the Hund's coupling. So how we take this into account? We look for magnetic degrees of freedom. So we integrate out the electronic degrees of freedom, and what we get is regular Erkekawa interaction. Okay, and this Erkekawa interaction is proportional to the Pauli susceptibility, which we compute with this model. I actually did both calculations with five orbital dead banding model, and after we project, the difference is minimal. So so we compute both the bare susceptibility and RPA susceptibility, and this is a result. So on the top, this is bare susceptibility, and these are the susceptibility enhanced by interaction. So basically, you see that when y is equal to zero, okay, so it's very small. It's actually what you see that you have peaks at phi 0, 0 pi, and despite the not very good nesting, that where from itinerant model the magnetic fluctuation would be enhanced. So when you add carriers, you see that at some moment the susceptibility becomes rather flat, and then what you see is that you have some enhanced fluctuation close to gamma point, but to some incommensurate orders. Because what you can see that the scale for susceptibility, for RPA susceptibility, and for bare susceptibility, numbers are quite different. Okay, so when we integrate it out, we compute the Erkekawa interaction as a function of the distance between iron, and we compute them up to the third neighbors. You can see a red, green, and blue corresponds to the first, second, and third neighbors. They are the dominating Erkekawa interaction. And basically, okay, I didn't say it here, that what happens if you look what happens with this iron excess, that this peak dissipates. Okay, so that's like the main effect. So basically, the peak disappears, this pi 0, 0 pi peak in Pauli susceptibility disappears about 0.04. And what we try to understand is just this, what happens first. So let's just look for some simple phenomenological model. Maybe it will be easier, which would be a phenomenological model for susceptibility for small values of iron excess. So here, basically, the height of the peak is controlled by a parameter alpha. If alpha is large, then the peak is large. If alpha is small, the peak is small. And so if we go from here, we see that actually, when peak disappears, almost nothing happens with nearest neighbor coupling, while the second and the third neighbor coupling are decreasing. And since the change in Erkekawa interaction will change the magnetism, how we account for this? So in our new effective magnetic model, our coupling between magnetic moment has two components. The first one, which is independent on the level of iron excess, that which we had for the most stoichiometric iron telluride, plus this y-dependent Erkekawa interaction. So this second term depends on the amount of iron excess. And basically, this what happened. And once again, we keep only first, second, and third neighbor coupling. And you see that the first neighbor coupling first is almost not changing, but then at large y it's changing sign. This is actually important. And then you can also see that the second neighbor coupling decreased significantly compared to the small values of y. So, we did classical minimization. Let me forget about this. So basically, we look for all possible states, but for reasonable values of parameters, only these states enter. So, and these are the spiral, pi 0, 0, pi, and then this bicollinear spiral, and this kind of incommensurate QQ spiral. Let me show, this is the end of my talk. So it's basically the phase diagram which we get. So here on the vertical axis, this is the ratio between nearest neighbor and second neighbor by quadratic and ring exchange. So we fix a value for K2 equal to 3 milli electron volt. And this is just the ratio. And here is the y. What we see that at small value, because once again it's classical minimization, for small values of y, we again get this single cell, and basically this is because in Pauli susceptibility this would be the dominating interaction. There are no compounds here, so that's why for iron telluride this simple stripe, single stripe was not seen. But then you can see that the double stripe, especially for large values of biquadratic exchange, is quite stable. But then the state which wins at larger values of Y, at larger values of RNSS, is this incommensurate spiral with a correct Q vector. We did it at T equals zero, so that's why we didn't study the how the Q vector is changing with temperature, but the values of Q vector which we obtained are quite similar to the experiment. So this basically, this change in the exchange with Y, which explains the change of the phase diagram, and here is my conclusion. So basically the main idea that the simple hybrid model can capture the evolution of magnetic order with iron excess, and probably you need this hybrid model if you want to take care of it. Thank you.
You have this localized spin between and the couple. How do you calculate the exchange for the localized spins?
For the localized spins, we took this from which goes from DFT, what we assume, because the DFT, this far one for the same paper from where we take this tight bonding model, it's computed not for y equals 0, y equals 0.4. So we look what is our Atokawa interaction computed with their tight bonding parameter for this point. We subtract it from their DFT values in order to get Heisenberg exchanges. And then we just said these are the net Heisenberg exchange, because even at small y, you still have some itinerant electrons, so it's both Heisenberg plus Atokawa. And then we fix this Heisenberg exchange. They are not changing with iron excess, while the rest is changing according to these figures which I showed.
Peter, you mentioned at some point that a purely itinerant model did not succeed in capturing this physics. So what was the model that was really used? Who did the calculation and what was the result?
Okay, so we took this tight bonding model as well.
Okay.
So we compute what is the susceptibility.
Yeah.
We look to the what is like where the fluctuations are the most enhanced, and they're enhanced by 0.05.
Right, and increasing y in such a model doesn't suppress the
positive. So increasing y, then you do not stabilize pi half at all, never.
I see.
So for this, you really need this localized exchange. And even if you take this more sophisticated calculation of Marzin, which would take this electron integrating the biquadratic exchange from the itinerant model, it still does not enough to stabilize the pi half. And then you get Q vector, but you don't get Q vector. So you don't have this Q vector with the same Q, diagonal Q vector.
I'm a little confused because DFT calculations quite early on found this pi half ground state. So why is the tight bonding model, which is derived from that, finding this?
I don't know this calculation. I don't know this work. I don't know this work.
That's
explain.
I can't tell you the reference, but this is something.
I think
that
if the reference
talks over and over.
Yeah, probably they just check a few all the ground states. They didn't check the.
So the DFT calculation, this is the same calculation which I cite. This is the most cited one, this Fa-Wang calculation.
Yes, okay.
And actually they admit on the third page that what they get is a spiral.
Mm-hmm.
But what they say that the next state, the excited state, it is pi half. But I didn't see any calculation.
What they're saying is that they probably didn't look at the spiral, those early calculations that I'm thinking.
Yeah, and
okay, that's quite possible.
As far as I remember, they compared so with the normal stripe phase, and well, they were kind of arguing that it was associated with how the density of states reorganized. So
actually, we tried two type bandits, one from Imada, and then another from this work. They're slightly different. None of them gives time. Mm-hmm.
But pi 0 0 pi ordered an itinerant model of enhanced flotations, and pi 0 0 pi are an itinerant model. It's absolutely natural. You know physically where they come from. There, you make rank parameters and make species being picked at pi half pi half. But this is just
You cannot.
Well, you can probably do something with parameters, but what I'm trying to say is that this is completely unnatural.
We try. We play with this. So I have a student, he played a lot with this. You cannot.
Natasha, question to the first part of your talk. So could you make a precise statement about the role of bipyramidal interaction? Can you, without them, stabilize the spiral of the cathode?
In quantum mechanics, yes.
Right, so the equation you showed was did not have any K, right? Where you
No.
Right, so we did the Boston Primakov and did the non-linear spin wave, that was without K.
You see it's also in exact decomposition.
Okay.
We take it from a medium. I actually don't know how to integrate out electrons and get
but
all
but
this
bipolarity. The magnetic lattice coupling.
How big is magnetic lattice coupling?
Yeah.
We just give some as a free parameter. So we just look to the numbers which were given. But it's very stable. You can for this bipolarity terms, so we put the ratio. So these both phases are very stable. So basically, these parameters you should put something there, but
yeah,
it's not very not very sensitive.
Equal.
I'm just saying that yes, we don't know. I mean, there are some stiffnesses we just can try to estimate it, but.
Okay,
thank you.
Leon.
I had a couple simple questions. So the one, I think maybe you mentioned because I forgot already, or maybe last few minutes. For the just pure iron telluride, the experimental phase diagram, is that phase transition, the thermal phase transition, is that continuous or first order?
You mean
the paramagnetic to magnetically ordered transition?
It's first order.
It's first order. And if I understand right, so in the just in the localized model, at least classically, you need the bipyramidal term to actually not only stabilize a particular type of multi-q state, but to fix the wave vector to pi over 2, pi over 2. So if you just take classical minimization, it would generically be an commensurate along to that value. So if you had a continuous transition, probably.
Unless you put J1 equals 0. So as long as J1 is not equal to 0, you always go, because classically you have this one term which gain energy. Maybe it's small, but it will always give you some twist, so you always go to the, some spiral set.
I guess the other question is something I always wonder about with this magnetoelastic kind of argument for generating bipyramidal term. And there you treat the phonon classically. If it's really a quantum phonon, then that's not an instantaneous dynamics at some scale. And you know, if you do a quantum fault, you know, kind of zero temperature quantum treatment, but even zero temperature classical treatment, you don't get a bipyramidal term really. Do you know what the energy of the phonon mode is? So somehow this treatment makes sense if the frequency of the phonon is high compared to the
frequency,
energy, I guess.
The frequency, I mean, we looked to the frequency phone, and actually the person who did it was Andre Newpo, okay?
Yeah.
So the frequencies of phonons are quite high,
mm-hmm.
and then you can try, and especially of this shear mode. Okay. So, and this is also the strongest one, and it actually corresponds to this monoclinic distortion. So basically what we did is simply integrate out, and then what we get. But we also include this finite Q modes, okay? But we integrate them out by the same.
Okay.
One more. Yeah, just quick question. So we know that in the FESE case, if you apply pressure, a lot of things happen. I just lost track. So in the FETE case, did anybody try to apply pressure and ask what happens to the magnetic phase diagram?
I mean, in a sense,
because it might be interesting to ask whether, you know, when the magnetism is being suppressed.
Okay,
or whether...
let's put this way. I don't remember now, but I think this the same group in Dresden.
Yeah.
They also look for pressure. I don't remember the answer.
Okay, because it would be interesting to see whether there's
a
magnetic structure.
I'm not sure that they did exactly for iron telluride. All they look for iron telluride doped with selenium.
Mm-hmm.
I remember it was one work with pressure, but it was for structure because they were not looking for magnetism. So that was structural stuff in any case.
Yeah, because I think the point is that it would be very interesting just to see whether this magnetic structure is very robust as the magnetism is being suppressed by pressure as opposed to by something else.
Okay, I have to check, but I don't know.
So, here's one more.
Yeah, I had two parts to this one and a half questions. One was, the most important one was, what insight to the nature of the pairing do you get from these changed or modified magnetic interactions that you have with the beryllium system? Does one get any insight? Does it suggest a different pairing mechanism, or would you expect that?
So, pairing happens when you put enough of selenium, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Once you put enough of selenium, then in your itinerant picture, the magnetic fluctuation are dominant at pi 0, 0 pi, so the nature of pairing,
so you,
I
see.
Think
so
is
you
the
think of this as a sideshow to that story?
No, but this was shown that if you look to the intensity, so
mm-hmm.
if you look to the intensity of magnetic, or the magnetic peaks,
mm-hmm.
so if selenium is zero, very small,
mm-hmm.
then the main peaks are at pi half, pi half.
Mm-hmm.
Once you add selenium, you dope it with selenium, then it goes towards pi zero, and then I think it becomes more or less standard story for Knicker. So I don't think, so since superconductivity does not happen before the peak increase at pi zero, so I don't think that one should discuss the change in the pairing mechanism.
Even though, as we know, we have this zero bias anomaly in the 50-50 system, which suggests something very different about the
pi 0, 0 pi.
The 50-50
system.
The 50 selenium tellurium system has
yes, so this
zero
is the
bias anomaly, which
what's the zero bias anomaly?
It's my favorite. I think it's a Majorana, probably a Majorana fermion.
zero bias is without a theoretical bias. Zero bias.
But the point before one gets into all of that, it suggests this feature isn't seen in the other in any other systems, as far as I know. It suggests the pairing is a little bit different.
What's the measurement we're talking about, Pierce?
Well, the aside was about tunneling into iron, selenium, tellurium, but
in the superconducting
state. But okay, before we get involved in that, my other question was,
mm-hmm.
what about spin orbit coupling, which is obviously strong with tellurium? Does that affect the picture? Does that modify?
Probably it's a very good idea, but since I'm not the person to do ab initio calculation, so I think one need to do ab initio calculation, including spin orbit coupling. Then do the proper tie binding calculation and see how it's different from non-relativistic tie binding
mm-hmm.
model. Then, once it's done by somebody else, I will be very happy to see what are the implications to all of this.
Uh-huh.
That was not done. We looked to all possible tie binding. Well, there are actually not so many, but basically there's one available from Imada and one available from Fa Wang. And I don't know any other tight binding model done for iron telluride.
So Pierce, is the 50-50 a monoclinic at low temperature?
I have no idea. I think it's the same structure as all the other guys.
No,
it's changes.
No, it changes. Sorry,
changes.
It's a different kettle of fish.
So
I don't believe it is a different kettle of fish.
It has a much higher TC. It has a different crystal structure.
Well, it sure looks pretty square from the SDM. Looks the same as the others from the SDM.
So, yeah, we're going to continue this. Thank you.
Thank you.